The month three of the social distancing era of the Pick Six podcast. Hello, everybody. I'm Sam McEwen along with Chris Hetty. Chris, welcome back to the podcast. You were gone last week when you were on a break, and now you have returned. And I'm sort of looking at you, so I'm looking at you through this. So when people think I'm looking at something, I'm just looking at you. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. How are you?
I'm all right. I'll be on a break next week for folks. So Chris will be piloting the podcast, not necessarily by himself. He'll also have some special guests, I'm sure. But we will not stop the Pick Six podcast when I'm on a break, just as we did not stop when Chris and Evan were on breaks. Evan will be back, I think, the week following. So congrats, obviously, to him for having some time off. We're going to talk a little bit about college sports starting to inch back to campuses. That appears to be likely, not next week, but the week after, with the NCAA's vote this week that would allow college athletes to start getting back to campus in very early June. The SEC is going to vote on a sort of a blanket date today. Nebraska officials expect that to be June 1st, and then the Big Ten will probably follow suit. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll also talk just a little bit about the transfer situation now that the NCAA has tabled the immediate eligibility transfer until the fall or winter legislative cycle. Why that was tethered, why football was tethered to basketball, still remains unclear to me, but they were. And so now there's some situations in both the Nebraska men's and women's basketball teams that they're going to have to sort of work through over the next couple of months in terms of waivers. And then we're going to do something a little different, and we're going to start doing this once a month if we can. We're going to call it the Quick Pick, where for today it's going to be myself and Chris. We're each going to have 10 questions, and we don't know what the questions are beforehand, and I'm confident we will not overlap. And we're going to ask those and quickly debate them. And some of the questions will be pop culture. Some of them will be sports. Some will just be general life stuff. But the goal with each one is to spend only about 2 minutes on each one. So we're not going to overwhelm you with like a long, deep debate, but just kind of hit one little nugget after another, and we'll call that the Quick Pick. So every month, even when the seasons start beginning, we're going to start doing that just to have a little fun with what we're thinking about or stuff that's going on in our own lives. We want to remember and remind everyone that the Pick Six podcast is brought to you by Team Schwalbach. The Schwalbach Agency is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with 4 licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys. Motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles. I hope you're able to enjoy those during your Memorial Day weekend. It may be hard to do that because it's going to rain all over, but some of you are listening to this podcast from places where it will be nice and sunny. We hope you're able to enjoy that weekend and also remember those who died in service for this country. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mossick, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They will help you save a bundle. Free, no obligation, insurance reviews and quotes. They're going to make sure that all their Nebraska fans are properly protected. You can reach them at 402-590-5200. That's 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thank you to Team Schwalbach, the Schwalbach Agency. Chris, so sports is starting to come back, or at least it seems. Here in the coronavirus pandemic era, we have been waiting and waiting and waiting for organized team workouts, which were effectively suspended on Friday, March 13th. And so it's been 2 months and about 8 days since then that we've been waiting for sports to start to begin to resemble what has been normal. In the meantime, a lot of people have lost their lives, and that's very tragic. A lot of people have stepped up and saved lives, which is really heroic. Simultaneously, some schools have begun to cut sports, which is also sad. And I don't think we're going to be at the end of that yet. I think it's going to continue to happen. All during the while, the conversation around whether college football could come back has ultimately changed. A month and a half ago, there was a conversation with some epidemiologist or some associate professor at a university in Georgia that said that if college football comes back and we let it burn, 2 million people or some ridiculous number might die or be infected. That was where the conversation began. Then there was an inching and inching and inching and inching toward where we are right around this moment. The NCAA voted on Wednesday to allow college football, men's basketball, and women's basketball athletes to return to campus as soon as June 1st, depending on how state and local authorities see the situation and how the respective conferences and schools decide to determine it. Most of these schools do not have on-campus classes right now, and so these athletes would be coming back when the campus is relatively quiet. Chris, the SEC votes today to move this to June 1st. The Big Ten may move after that. What impact is this going to have, do you think, on the beat that you specifically cover, Nebraska men's basketball,
yeah,
and just the general gist of Nebraska athletics?
I mean, it almost feels like it's going to become like what we missed covering in the spring. We're going to have things to actually talk about again. And the interesting thing for basketball, at least from my perspective, you know, they have always planned to have students back on June 6th.
Right.
So that will continue barring the vote for the Big Ten. What's super interesting though is, you know, so basically the NCAA said June 1st, June 30th, you can do workouts. And a couple of interesting things. One, Nebraska basketball wise, the coaches can't be on the floor. So this is like normal. Like this is what they would normally do. So coaches can't be on the floor. They have to do their own specific workouts, the players.
Okay.
And so there wouldn't be any, you know, 5-on-5 with Fred Hoiberg there with a whistle. Also, you've got 4 international students who would have to come back into the country, and one of whom is Ivan, who is living in France right now. And I was talking to someone yesterday about the question of, okay, well, can he get back into the country? And if he does he have to quarantine for 14 days? And if he does, then what's the point? Because if he can't get here until June, you know, 7th, and then he has to quarantine for 14 days, and all of a sudden it's, you know, June 21st, and you only have 10 more days to actually practice. And then once July comes around, what do you do? And also, once Ivan comes over here, he's here. Like, there's no way they're going to let him go back to France and then come back for the fall semester. So you kind of have to figure out when you can get these guys on campus in the first place. So for football, it's different than basketball, I think. Basketball, it's kind of business as usual, but you just might not get everybody because people are international students. Football, it's, you know, hey, we have to do, it's brand new, it's spring practice again. Like, would it be normal? Like, would football coaches be allowed to be on the field with players? Do you know?
Well, there's an amount of time that they can be on the field, but yeah, at this moment, spring football practice is not being brought back.
Right.
You know, there's not a mechanism that allows that right now. The NCAA isn't changing its rules. You usually get about 8 hours of instruction. A lot of that's being done online now. So it's a sort of modified workouts. I think the state DHM does not really allow. The state DHM, which is modified as of June 1st, it gives them some flexibility. I mean, they might be able to put, you know, 50 to 100 people in a weight room. I don't think you're going to be seeing a football practice per se right away. There's a lot going on the football side of it. Obviously, with basketball, as you mentioned, there's some complications with athletes. One thing that I talked to Amy Williams about yesterday, and it was a good conversation about a lot of different things. But one of the things that I talked to her about is she's got 2 players from Australia. One of them is a returning player. And they feel like her visa is going to be fine. And her visa has already been approved. One of them is not. One of them is an incoming freshman. And they're concerned that her visa will not be approved right away. Mm-hmm. And so her return may be later than normal. There will be a conversation about quarantining, although Australia is one of the least hit countries. And France, unfortunately, is one of the most hit. So there will be a conversation about quarantining once they get back. But sooner or later, Evan's going to have to get back. Mm-hmm. And you want him back. I think that the stated position of Nebraska athletics is we feel like our athletes are going to be safer on campus in Lincoln than they would be somewhere else. And I think, you know, that's kind of Nebraska's approach to it. They feel like they can secure tests. They feel like they can sanitize. They feel like there can be a quarantine process, and they have the facilities to do it. Because they have dorms, and they have dorms and living facilities that people are not in right now, that actually makes this somewhat feasible logistically. But I don't think you're going to see a padded football practice or anything like that anytime soon. Probably can get a 7-on-7 rolling. Players can do that now, incidentally.
Yeah.
You know, if you went to a park and there were 15 people, you know, police might roll by and have a problem with it. But I can tell you that, you know, where I live in Lincoln, there's a basketball court about a block and a half down, and me and my kids go there sometimes. But they've had, over the last, I don't know, a couple of weeks, 15 to 20 high school kids just playing pickup hoops.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep playing there, so nobody's stopping them.
Well, there are gyms in Omaha,
right,
in which there are Division I basketball players that are playing pickup that we know about.
My understanding is that up until June 1st, you could do that, but you could only do it with 10 or fewer.
Sure.
So the point being that if you had a 7, you know, if Adrian Martinez organized 7-on-7, there were 20 guys there, technically, it's a little iffy, but I don't think anybody's stopping it. I mean, I think, mm-hmm. you know, who's gonna rat that out? Just nobody. So, mm-hmm. I mean, these kids keep playing basketball over here, so, you know, and it's right behind a fire station, so.
If anybody's gonna
nobody's stopping them.
Right.
Well, my sense is that, you know, these guys have been able to get together informally and do their own stuff, and we'll probably hear about that at some point, that Martinez and McCaffrey and I'm not sure Logan Smothers is back yet. I have to check in on that, but that some of these guys are able to, you know, do these things, but I'm not sure where Martinez is either. Like, to be very honest with you, I'm not sure how many of these guys got all the way back, but the point is they could do their own workouts and things like that. The changes should allow them to be able to gather and congregate and have some flexibility as it relates to working out.
Well, in some ways, I think this decision isn't necessarily about the workouts. It's just about getting people back. That's almost what's
important. It's bad, but it's also about, you know, yeah, having a purpose for getting back, which is the organized workouts. Like,
yeah.
You don't want them to just come back and then sit in their houses all day.
Sure, yeah. But just the first step of getting them back in the first place –
Yeah,
they're there, and they're likely not going to go anywhere at any point. So now you've got them, and that's the first step of getting sports back.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Nebraska got obviously the short end of the stick with the practice stuff. They didn't get the shortest end. There were some schools that didn't have any spring practices. Nebraska got 2. Purdue got 7 or 8.
Really?
Northwestern got 8 or 10. Because they started in February. So I don't think anybody got all the way done. One of Nebraska's opponents did, Central Michigan. They got, I think, all of their practices in. But
15, right?
I think so.
Wow. Yeah.
I'd have to go back and look. But most schools didn't get in all of them. Nebraska's a little shorter on the end of the stick there. But, you know, if you bring the kids back and they're, you know, they're doing the workouts in June and then you're starting camp in July – maybe you get a few extra practices because, you know, you try to give schools some ramp up time. It's not perfect, but I was struck by Frost's comments that he's really confident that his players are going to come back in really good shape.
Yeah.
They know what their guys are doing.
Sure. I mean, from the basketball perspective, there's an assumption that that's not going to happen. Because you can do what you can do, but I mean, there's even, you know, this is extremely niche Nebraska basketball message board gossip, but Ivan looks like he's slimmed up a little bit in France. And so it looks like, I mean, Nebraska basically is like, we know that they're not going to come back totally perfectly in shape, but mm-hmm. we'll mold it when they come back. But I also think that it's probably easier to do that in basketball than football. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Ivan, I saw a dunk. Did he?
Yeah. Have?
Good.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, I thought Ivan was in pretty decent. I mean, was he in good shape or was, or like, did they want him to improve?
I think it would almost benefit him to slim up a little bit. I think he'd be a little bit more agile, and that would be nice for him because his footwork wasn't great. And the bulkiness that he had didn't necessarily benefit him a ton against the much, much bigger guys. I think if he can become a little more agile, that's fine. I also think, I mean, he'd never lifted weights before, so his weight wasn't necessarily evenly distributed. So I think if you, maybe that's part of the plan, you know, all of a sudden Adrian Martinez was bigger than he was the year prior, his sophomore year. So maybe, you know, that was kind of the plan for Ivan, slim down a little bit.
I think they probably hoped to protect Martinez a little bit from injury, and they didn't. I'm not sure. If you look at the two new big guys that Nebraska has, and this is a little off the beaten path here, but Eduardo Andre and Lat Mann, both of those guys have pretty specific body types. They're both long and lean, and they can run, and, you know. Mann appears to be quite a ways ahead of Andre in terms of his skills. Maybe Andre can get to that point. So I could see them wanting to see Udrago kind of get to there, like, you know, where he's a little bit leaner and can run a little bit.
Yeah. How they rotate those three with Derek Walker is super interesting to me. I think they can do so many different things with the roster they have. They can go huge. They can go really small. They can go defensive oriented. They can go offensive oriented. It's interesting. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, all right, you have four big men, which means you don't have one, because there's not one guy that can kind of do everything that you want to do. Lat Man's probably the closest to that.
Right.
How Ivan works into the rotation is really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I think because of what Ivan and Thor did last year in terms of taking their punches, they deserve playing time. Like, they deserve a chance first. And I'm curious how that plays out.
Well, Thor will play.
I mean, Thor will definitely play. Yeah. Shooter.
Isn't he?
Do what?
He'll be their best 3-point shooter.
Probably. Yeah. He was last year. Yeah. No, he was last year. I mean, yeah, he'll be kind of your token bench 3-point shooter. Yeah. I mean, I think Teddy will probably make the most. Kobe Webster might make the most, but I wouldn't surprise me if Thor shoots the best percentage.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, Thor may be asked to play fewer minutes because he doesn't have to, but that's okay. Like, yeah. I think there's a huge role for him on the team, and he'll Andre, just based on what I was told and whatever, is a guy that in the next 2 years is going to get a lot better. Like, he's, you know, his growth curve, he started playing when he was 14 or 15, he said. His growth curve is not, you know, isn't hit its peak yet.
Yeah, I think Nebraska's going to do one of two things when they take freshmen. Either these freshmen are going to play right away, or they don't need to play right away. They'll get some minutes, which, I mean, it'll be 1994 again, where you're a freshman, you don't play a lot. Yeah. You work behind the people that you work behind, and you get a lot better. And by the time you're a, you know, redshirt sophomore or a junior or a senior, you're pretty good. The one thing he does do is, you know, I know Nebraska was worried about rim protection and shot blocking before they added this. That's why they wanted to add a big man. And this kid can do that. For whatever reason, I think left-handed big men that are tall and long just seem to have a knack for shot blocking. Mm. And that's what he is able to do. So, I mean, he'll definitely get minutes, I think, because at some point they're going to say, all right, well, Derek or Ladd or whoever isn't guarding the post, right? And we need to get, you know, Andre in there. So, yeah. I think he'll play a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's great, great-looking athlete. Back to the kids getting in. I, Nebraska's got kind of a plan in place, I think, for testing and for quarantining for folks who are coming back to campus. Whether or not we find out exactly every last little logistic of that plan, I don't know. But I think you're going to find that most of the Big Ten schools have come up with plans, and they will, you know, Illinois just released its plan, and Nebraska's will probably be better than Illinois. But it sounds like this. Football and men's basketball student athletes are scheduled to arrive first in small groups over series day in early June. The return protocol includes initial and ongoing viral and antibody testing, initial quarantining, contact tracing, arrangements for extended quarantine and care of any student athlete testing positive for COVID-19 by early July. DIA, which is Illinois, anticipates student athletes from women's basketball, volleyball, and soccer will have returned to campus as well. By the way, women's basketball, I don't think is going to be July at Nebraska. I think they're going to get back sooner than that. DIA will evaluate the ability to return student athletes from sports beyond these five as the summer progresses. I'm surprised that Illinois is decoupling men's and women's basketball, because that seems like a little bit of a Title IX thing. Mm-hmm. Not sure how you can make the argument that the men are more important than the women in the basketball end, but football will obviously be given, you know, a priority because that's the sport that comes back most quickly and requires the most, logistical support. So I think Nebraska's got a plan in place.
Do you have a sense of why volleyball wasn't involved, since volleyball is a spring sport and men's basketball are winter?
Yeah, the NCAA made a distinction there. I'm not really sure why. My sense is with men's and women's basketball, it's because of wanting to get the kids back on campus because there's a certain training protocol in the summer. One, two. International students, and there are some international volleyball players, but I don't think it's at anywhere near the degree mm-hmm. that you see, especially in men's basketball. A lot of these kids, you know, Ivan's just one, but there's so many, you know, Ivan Thor, lots of, you know, Creighton's got, I don't know, multiple players from other countries who need to arrive. They just picked up two guys, I think, both of whom are really good players. Who need to arrive. And so I think there were some reasons behind why those three sports initially. I know John Cook was pissed off, right?
Yes, like, he was. Yeah.
His podcast with his daughter. And well, that's a podcast, by the way, but
yeah, it is. Yes, well, he's
not happy.
John, I very much enjoy listening to John Cook speak for many reasons, but he does do this. I mean, he's been on the NCAA for like years and years and years for many things. He called it the anti-Nebraska rule is what he called it.
Yeah.
He also, did you take anything away from what he's, when I was listening to him talk about the plans for the fall and volleyball and the season and protocols, all this stuff, I listened to that and I thought to myself, I bet you there's similar conversations happening with football. Was that too much of a leap, do you think?
Maybe. I think.
I mean, no, I wasn't thinking they're going to do conference only scheduling, but I figured, Nebraska football's probably doing similar things than the volleyball team's doing, don't you think?
As it relates to scheduling, here's what I would say. There have been multiple conversations about scheduling. It is more complex in football than it is in volleyball because athletic budgets are at stake. And it does not benefit, it does not really benefit the Power Five conferences unless they are prepared to cross this threshold very soon. It does not really benefit Power Five conferences to have Group of Five and FCS athletic departments fall into the ocean because they cancel the non-conference games.
Yeah.
It does not benefit them. It doesn't really benefit Nebraska to run out of teams like Central Michigan. You want to play Central Michigan. Because you want to get seven home games. You want to make bowls. You want to make those athletic departments whole. You don't necessarily want a situation where you're stuck playing one of the other 64 Power 5 teams and for all of your games. Could I see a scenario in which it goes conference only and it's a shortened season? I could. Could I see a scenario in which, and this is where it's division round robin, that would be stunning. It'd be kind of awesome. So let's be honest.
I think it would be awesome. Awesome. I think it'd be great.
Home and home with Iowa, that'd be great. Could I see that? It's possible. But one of the big challenges you have and one of the pushback that you're going to get is, well, look, if we don't play these games, these athletic departments are going to be in financial trouble, one. Two, you have schools like Iowa who have to play Iowa State and Northern Iowa. Yeah. Now, maybe you can work around Iowa State for a year. That's not that big of a deal. Northern Iowa, I mean, you know, it's a public school. provision, you know, it's governed by the same group of people that govern Iowa. Becomes hard.
Yeah.
It becomes really hard. And so there's situations like that. I don't know what all the situations are, but that make it challenging. I don't know if Michigan's playing Eastern Michigan. I have no idea. So, you know, that's just something to keep in mind. I think there's definitely scheduling conversations going on. But at the same time, somebody's going to have to explain to me why Central Michigan, South Dakota State, and Cincinnati can't travel on a plane. Let's say you went to the round robin format. Well, okay, so you're busing to all of these places. That's fine. I can tell you that, you know, Bloomington, Indiana, busing to State College, Pennsylvania on the east side, good luck.
Yeah. What Cook said was
– no way.
Part of it was because each conference will have their own protocols of how things go.
Yeah.
And so he was like, what you don't want is you don't want a volleyball team, you know, flying to Florida and then Texas and then Missouri.
Right.
And each state, it's a different type of thing and it's a different conference and all that. So that would be but at the same time, like, just because, like, travel's travel in one way or another.
So that's right. So, like, yeah, I think he makes a really good point there. I guess I'm just saying that it wouldn't make any difference in volleyball financially.
Like, sure. Yeah.
You know, bringing in, you know, whoever they would bring in. And financially, it hurts Nebraska a little bit, but they're on the far end of that, whereas a lot of these other schools are going to be financially hurt by traveling around and then not having any home games, et cetera, et cetera. And so, yeah, it's an 8-hour and 45-minute bus trip from Bloomington, Indiana to State College, Pennsylvania. And
so it's twice that from Lincoln.
Ghoulish. Well, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't bust Nebraska to State
College. Yeah, I'm just
saying. Penn State wouldn't bust from State College to Lincoln.
Right.
Those days are over. You know, they used to take cross-country train trips, but they don't do that anymore. So, you know, like, all I'm saying is that, you know, for South Dakota State to come down from Brookings on a bus is pretty feasible.
Sure.
You know, Cincinnati to Nebraska is not, it's not, no, it's a long way. It's like 11 hours, but you can do it, you know.
Well, so that's
I'm just why, saying that yeah. there's some schools that will have a desire to continue to play their non-conference games, especially when they get a payoff.
Yeah. Well, there's also the element of what Cook had said was, well, there's no reason why we couldn't play Creighton and UNO.
That's right.
So if you can have smaller schools that are really close to you, what's the harm? So I get that.
I think that's right. I think you can play UNO and Creighton twice even. You know, I don't know. But I guess we'll find out everything that happens from there. So that kind of is ramping up. You're going to see more happen over the next week or so. Chris will be your guy to handle that. And then the transfer rule this week. The NCAA decided to table any immediate waivers for one-time transfers to play, you know, at their new school right away if it's their first transfer. That was expected at one time during the winter to be sort of a no-brainer. What changed? The coronavirus changed things, I think, quite a bit. And so as a result, the NCAA is tabling that, and they're going to do it through their regular legislative cycle this fall. I think some of that is to address concerns, legitimate concerns that football programs may have about scholarship counters and the number of players that you can bring into your program in a given year. Right now, you can bring in 25 scholarships per season, and you're allowed to back count 5, which gives you 30. It actually you get up to 30 pretty fast. It doesn't take that much effort. Most recruiting classes are 23 to 25 anyway, 20 to 25. And then if you want to add a few more transfers and things like that out of the portal, you can get up to 30 pretty quickly. The challenge that they've found in football is that the teams were getting up to these numbers, and there's a lot of kids left in the portal because most of the teams were hitting their 30 or their 25 a year, and they didn't have a lot of wiggle room to add a bunch of kids. Even if they liked the kids, they didn't have a lot of wiggle room to add them. This is not really an issue in basketball because, A, there's a scholarship limit in basketball, and, B, there's quite a bit of movement in the sport. Like, usually players can find another spot. You know, for example, Oh, who's going to Tulane? Kevin Cross.
Kevin Cross, yep.
Where'd Samari Curtis end up?
Evansville.
Well, the equivalent of Samari Curtis and Kevin Cross and whoever else, Charlie Easley or what, that those players in football are just generally just staying in the portal. There's not a lot of movement there. Or they got to go to JUCO. And they go to JUCO and then they come out. There aren't necessarily, unless you're a graduate transfer, it's hard. It's just hard because you transfer and then you got to sit. And that's a scholarship that you eat up. And if they don't change the counter system to that, then the portal in college football gets a little gummed up and it just gets stuck and there's a lot of kids in there and they don't know how to get out, you know, metaphorically speaking. And they got to go to JUCO and then they matriculate back upward. And it's kind of a stinky situation because that's not what JUCOs are there for really either. Like JUCOs aren't there for Guy Thomas to go play for a year. And then, I mean, it's just not, junior colleges aren't designed necessarily for, you know, a portal pipeline or a secondary pipeline. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it got tabled. The problem with that is that Nebraska men's basketball and women's basketball has a couple of athletes that I think both programs expected to play this year. On the men's side, Chris, that means King and Trey McGowan's have to apply for waivers to play immediately. What would they apply for, and how important is it that both of those guys are able to play right away?
So it's two different scenarios, to be completely honest. One, so the plan has always been for them to apply for waivers. And so if this rule had gone through, it would have been kind of like a happy, this is kind of nice. They weren't necessarily relying on it. With Trey McGowan's, that's the tricky one. Because, I mean, it's very traditional transfer. He was somewhere for 2 years. He decided to leave. He comes to another school. You can't really argue that he's coming closer to home because he's actually going further away from home. You can't really argue he's going towards something he knows more or some, anything better. It's not like he spent time in Nebraska or in, you know, the Midwest. What I have heard is that what they could potentially do is say, you know, Trey wanted to go somewhere that was less affected by the coronavirus. He was at Pittsburgh, so he goes to Nebraska, which is a, you know, less density population. That seems like a stretch to me, but that's also going to be an argument that a lot of people are going to make.
It is
correct. You could also argue that you know, his season got taken away, the end of the season got taken away, and that created issues, which is obviously, you know, true for everybody in some ways. So that one's a little bit different. But they're definitely gonna apply for one. That one would be surprising to me if he gets eligible, which I think, you know, just from based on conversations I've had, they're kind of okay with, like, obviously they want him to play, but it's kind of a, you know, situation where they're going to apply for a waiver. They're going to do the best they can. If they get it, that's great. If not, he's their point guard next year with Delano when Kobe Webster graduates. So it's kind of like a nice handing off the baton. Kobe King is a really interesting situation. He's not talked to the media since he committed, actually in part because of the train, because of their want to make sure he becomes eligible. They're applying for, you know, just in case he doesn't say anything that would basically mess up his eligibility. That's based, you know, that's kind of my assumption. But he left Wisconsin because of a lot of different reasons. He didn't like Greg Gard. He didn't like the way that he ran his program. And then there was also the situation with the Wisconsin strength coach who, while the strength coach was telling a story, used the N-word in front of the team, and that upset a lot of players, obviously. And that wasn't the reason why Kobe King left, but it was part of it. And that strength coach later resigned, which kind of helps Kobe King's case, I think,
right?
Because it proves there was some sort of damage. So I think that Nebraska is going to feel really good about that waiver. And I think there's a really good chance that he's eligible. there's some precedent that you can kind of go back on. It's interesting, you know, these eligibility waivers are basically like mini lawsuits. Like, here's precedent for this and X, Y, and Z. And so I think they're going to feel good about that. At the same time, you know, Nebraska felt really good about Shamil Stevenson's waiver last year, and that didn't go through. So you never really know, and that's why Fred Hoiberg hates this system. He wants it the one-time transfer so that there aren't some guys that get eligible and some guys that don't. So we'll see. I mean, those are the two. And I, as I wrote earlier this week, I don't think Nebraska's season necessarily hinges on either of these guys becoming eligible. I think they've got 10 scholarship players without these two. And that's about exactly what Nebraska wants in terms of playing time and dealing with stuff. At the same time, if they do become eligible, they're much better. Particularly if the only one is Kobe King, that really helps, because that's a position that you get that, you know, kind of longer 2-3. He's played in the Big Ten before. He's a good defensive player. He can stretch the floor. He can invert the floor. So, I mean, there are a lot of different things Nebraska can do with Kobe King. So that's kind of where they're at with that.
King is a player that strikes me as a potential starter. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I would be. Yeah, I think he. Yeah, I think he would start. He would be in my starting five. Yeah, I think he's absolutely a potential starter.
And what about McGowan's? Who would he be competing with?
Yeah.
Would he be competing with Kobe Webster then?
Yeah. I mean, they told Trey McGowan's, your natural position is a point guard. And so we want you there. So he'd kind of be competing with Kobe King and Kobe Webster as kind of like the one and the two.
Right.
At the same time, he would kind of be also competing with like Thor and Teddy and Shamil at like the three. He's definitely not going to play at four. I mean, he's 6'4". He's a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. I think it'd just be, I don't know, because I've struggled with that. I think Kobe King is more of a potential starter than Trey McGowan's, but I also think that Trey McGowan's might actually be better than Kobe King. So I don't really know how that works in my head, but yeah, he'd be competing for point guard spots so that'd be Kobe and Kobe Webster and Delano.
It seemed to have a lot of backcourt, and that's not a bad thing. I think college basketball is a guard game. So I think having good guards and having a good backcourt and having depth in your backcourt is good. I think the more guys you can get back there, if you can find two or three guys who are really special, great. But if you can't get your version of Tyshawn Alexander and Marcus Zagorowski, then you have four guys, you know, that can kind of do what those two do, at Creighton. And I think the ultimate goal is that Nebraska finds those guys that are that good. They have to, if you can find two guys that can do what those two guys do for their team, all the better. Because then you're kind of cooking with gas, and they had a little bit of that with Cam Mack, but then he didn't have a running mate. And that, I think that hurt him a little bit. They didn't have a big time 3-point shooting superstar scoring guard like Tyshawn Alexander. If it were me, I'd take Zagorowski over Cam Mack personally, because I think Zagorowski is one of the best players in the country. But Alexander was very, very helpful in all of that, because he was the sort of the star player, and he could play defense and score. And Nebraska could really use a player like that. And maybe Kobe King is ready to be, the player that Teran Petaway was, or the player that that James Palmer could be when he was playing well. If they can get that from Kobe King, then I think they could have a really nice season next year.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We'll have to see. All right, we're going to go with the quick pick now, Chris. Quick pick time. So each one of us is going to get 10 questions. We give our own answers, obviously, but then we get a response from the other. And so you will start. You're going to ask your question. I'm going to answer it, then you answer it. Okay. And then I will ask my question, and you'll answer it, and then I'll answer it, and so on and so forth. So these are sports, pop culture, just general life things. You don't necessarily want to have your best one right off the top.
Nope.
But you ready to roll?
Yeah.
All right, you go first. Go.
Okay, starting easy. You have all the resources to make a 10-part documentary, and you have as much time as you want or as you need to do it. What do you make it on?
Does it have to be a sports figure?
Does not. Doesn't even have to be about one person. It could be about anything.
Oh, wow. I'd probably make it a documentary about movies in the 70s.
That's really?
Created the movies, yep. And enough of those people are still alive that you could have a great roster of interviews. So that would be mine.
That's good.
A 10-part documentary on filmmakers and films in the 70s, starring Martin Scorsese, Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, Jack Nicholson, who's still alive, still with us, thank goodness. All those folks, Warren Beatty, who's still alive, all that. Yep, that would be what I do.
You also have a built-in of like 70, 71, 72, 73. You know, like that's one on each year. That's perfect.
You still got Coppola around. You still got, Brando's dead, but that's okay. You still have Pacino around, De Niro. You got all the major players. Get them interviewed and do the series.
That's good. The first thing that came to my mind, just because it's something that I know because I live here, I think it's hard not to say, I think the 90s Huskers deserve a documentary at some point. Maybe not 10, but 3, maybe?
10 would be fine.
3 or 4?
There's enough stories for 10, I'll tell you that.
Do what?
There's enough stories for 10.
There are, yeah. The question will be getting people to talk about any, you know, the things that, you know, are worth talking about. But I would say that, or I took a lot of World War II classes when I was a history major. So I don't know exactly what it would be, but it'd be something about World War II, maybe just like the 12 months after the end of the war. Because that's something that we kind of just, okay, well, VJ Day happened and everything's over. And yep. I would be curious about what, okay, we're 12 months later. Maybe not 10 parts, but maybe the 10 years after that. That would be interesting to me.
That's a good start. All right, I'm going to go with a Nebraska-specific question.
Okay.
What is one player on Nebraska's football team that you think is going to make a big jump from last year to this year?
That's good. The first person that comes to my mind is Dedrick Mills.
Okay.
I mean, he was good last year, there were a couple times when, and I say that because there were a couple times last year where I forgot that he was that fast. Like, there, it'd be like, is Maurice playing today? Or is that's Dedrick Mills. Interesting. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. And right. So I think he could have a 1,000-yard season like Divine Azigbo did. I think that he can make a significant jump of not necessarily like being one of the best backs in the Big Ten, but being productive enough that you don't have to put so much on. Because early in the season, a lot was put on Adrian's shoulders because he just wasn't that great. And then he started holding the football around and walking around campus with it and figuring out the offense a little bit and doing pretty well. So that's the first one I would say.
Mine's going to be Braxton Clark, the cornerback. I think he's going to have a big sophomore year. I think Clark has length and he can run. He's a pretty good runner. He reminds me a lot of Stanley John Baptiste, who used to be a corner at Nebraska in the early 2010s. Under Bo Pelini, I think Clark has got very similar skill set and will end up being a real nice player. I think he's hard to throw over because he's 6'3" and he's got a long stride. So Braxton Clark is my name to watch. Big jump from last year to this year.
He's a long kid.
Oh yeah.
And his hair makes him seem like 3 inches taller. Okay. You're in charge of a one night music festival. You have to pick an opener, a middle act, and a closer for your ultimate one night show. Any band or any performance artist is on the table. Who do you pick?
So I have to pick three people.
Yeah, three. Yeah, so it's you got your opener at like, you know, 7 o'clock, and then you've got your right in the middle, probably going about 9, and then your closer, you know, 10:30, 11.
My son is asking for my help with something, but I'm going to continue answering this question. So I'm a weird person in the sense that I'm the kind of person who if I was putting together that, I would think I would want to do this for other people, right? Like it wouldn't be my own personal choices. So I actually have a question on my list of what albums have shown up in your Spotify playing list. So some of the people that I would have that I like nobody would go see. So so I have to think of an opening act, a middle act, and then a closing act. That's a hard question.
Let me give you mine while you think, okay?
Go.
So my opener is Death Cab for Cutie because they're one of my favorite bands, and that's kind of an easy transition into the evening, right? Middle act is Fleetwood Mac because obviously
they're still alive.
They are.
Anybody dead, right?
Right. That's true. We'll do Fleetwood Mac during the rumors because they, you know, all the things. And then I feel like the closer you have to go big, so I'm going with the Beatles.
That's what I have to compete with, huh?
Hey, you're the one that's stalling. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that'd be good. That's good. That's really, really good. That's a solid group. Okay. I think that my so the headliners, so the last group would be the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like them a lot, but I think a lot of people like them, just in general. Yeah. So I thought of like, okay, it'd be the Rolling Stones or U2.
Yeah.
And I'll take the Rolling Stones. They're more fun. I think U2, it's more of a religious experience, whatever. The opener, I think, would be somebody who would probably get you going and just seems a little whatever, so I'll pick Janis Joplin.
Nice, that's good.
But I really like Janis Joplin. She would have been somebody that I would have loved to have seen live, but of course died like 10 years before I was born. Not 10, like 8, whatever. And then I think if I was going to pick, so we start with Janis Joplin, and then we have the Rolling Stones on the other end. And then somewhere in the middle, I think you got to have something to kind of make it, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Easy?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know, like something groovy.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, so I thought initially of Al Green, but I'm going to go with Bobby Womack, who I like a lot more.
That's good.
And so Bobby Womack.
That's really good.
And he's good, man. He's got some great songs. So it would be Janis Joplin, Bobby Womack, and then the Rolling Stones. And they all kind of are bluesy. You know, they're all a little bit – I think they could all fit together. That'd be my
– That's good.
You good? Mm-hmm. That's the answer? All right. If you could pick one obscure Olympic sport to participate in the Olympics in, what would it be?
Can't be swimming. That's not swimming, right?
Not bath. No. Swimming?
Because I was a swimmer. That's good. That's interesting.
Swimming's fine. If you want to pick that, you can. You're not
basketball. I mean, I also thought
LeBron James.
No, but I was a swimmer. That's why my mind went there. Is javelin different enough?
It's pretty. Yeah.
I would just be fascinated about how to learn about how to throw a javelin really far. Because I think it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's got to be just weird muscles that you have to work out like a ton that you don't ever use in daily life.
Right.
And I would just be interested in the experience of that. So that's a good question. I'd probably go with javelin. I'm sure you have an answer you've thought of because you love the Olympics.
Not really. I picked a couple. Handball, water polo.
Ooh.
But at the end of the day, short track speed skating. If I
could do that, that's good.
That'd be fun. That to me is one of the most fun Olympic events to watch is people going really fast on skates and going around tight corners and crashing. It's just unbelievably fun. So short track speed skating.
That's good. That's really good. You are opening a donut shop and you can hire one former Nebraska coach, head assistant, football or basketball to help run it with you. Who do you pick?
I'm opening a donut shop.
You're opening a donut shop. Yep.
And I can ask one coach.
This could be your partner. Like, he could – you're helping. I mean, you're running it with this guy.
Okay.
Or gal.
Charlie McBride.
Ooh, that's good. Why?
Great personality. Can talk to anybody. The kind of guy who you want to come see. He might bully you into a certain donut. You got to try this donut, you know. Charlie McBride. Yep.
That's really good.
Yeah.
It's hard for me not to say Mike Riley, just because I think in a different universe, he owns a coffee shop in Portland.
Probably does.
And so I think he would be really delicate and know, like, okay, we need this is the big one. They need this one on sale today.
Yeah.
Or this is the kind of coffee we're going to get because this is a really great guy and we're going to work with him. And he's going to come in and he's going to kind of be like your bartender and when, you know, when your bartender's really nice and therapeutic, but Mike can have a cup of coffee with you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I think it should be a gentle presence in the donut shop.
Okay. So Mike Riley would be your donut shop owner.
He'd
do a good job.
It's either Mike Riley or Bobby Lutz. Bobby Lutz is this current special assistant for Fred Hoiberg. He's very detailed, and he has these glasses that he wears that he wears them around his neck, and they connect right in front of his chest, you know? And right. So when he puts them on and he takes them off or whatever, and he just looks like a guy that owns a business that's doing really well. And he's just kind of in a hurry. So I think that we would just be an extremely efficient machine, and we would somehow revolutionize the way donuts are made and distributed in a similar way that he kind of revolutionized basketball. I just feel like he would do really well for business.
Most overrated basketball player.
That's really good. Most overrated basketball player of all time.
Yeah. Just whatever. It can be now. It can be all time. I don't care.
Charles Barkley.
Why?
I mean, I think Charles Barkley was good, but I don't think he would be. Man, this is going to get me in trouble. Is he that much better than Draymond Green?
He's a little better, but
yeah, but
he's not a better teammate. Draymond Green is one of the great teammates of all time.
Right. I guess I just think if I'm starting basketball team and it's between Charles Barkley and Draymond Green, the one thing Draymond Green has going for him is he knows he's not the best player on the team. And I think if you put Charles, I mean, he said it in The Last Dance, whenever he played Michael, he was like, that's when I realized I wasn't the best player in the league. And in my head, I was like, there are like six people that are better than you in the league right now. Like, I don't understand. I think he's funny. And I think that his personality on TNT has heightened who he is as a player. I just don't look at him and be like, oh, he's one of the best 15 players of all time.
Me, it's easy. It's James Harden.
That's good.
Enjoy his game. I think if you put him in a different time, he'd probably be a better player 25 years ago because he wouldn't do half the crap that he does. So he's a stat compiler, but obviously a prolific scorer, but I don't care for the way that he plays the game. And I think at times he just isn't, you know, I don't know that he helps you win the biggest games. So James Harden, talented scorer, one of my least favorite athletes players in the NBA. Go ahead.
That's good. One sporting event that you haven't covered but you want to.
Oh, the Masters.
Oh, yeah? Why?
Oh, I love golf. I don't talk about it a lot, but I love golf. I love that tournament. I'd love to see the course. I'd love to experience that. I think the Masters has become even more special since Tiger Woods joined the PGA Tour, and so it would be cool to cover that event when he could still win it. He's not my favorite golfer, but it would be cool to cover it when he was still playing, when Mickelson was still playing, because I think those two guys have taken the Masters and elevated it to something it wasn't even prior to their arrival. Mm-hmm. So the Masters, yeah. You?
Like a major boxing event would be really cool.
Yeah.
I have this book of like great deadline sports writing in the first, and it goes back to like, you know, the early 1900s, and almost everything in the first 40 years is boxing related. And those boxing matches were great. So I'd say that or a major bowl game. Like Music City. Yeah. Like Music City Bowl was fun and really cool, but I would love to cover a college football playoff game. I mean, just something that is defining in the history of a program. You know what I mean? That's why it was so disappointing that Nebraska didn't make the NCAA tournament last year. Cause I've never covered an NCAA tournament game, but I think covering one for like Kentucky or Duke is just kind of like another thing. But if you're covering an NCAA tournament game for some mid-major that's never been there, or Nebraska that's never won, like that would be fun. But I think major bowl game would be more consequential. I think that'd be fun.
Cool. So here's the next one. What is the sport that your dad watched most on TV growing up?
Golf, probably. Or This Old House. You ever watch This Old House on PBS?
Bob Vila?
I don't know, man. It's a show on PBS called This Old House, and every Saturday afternoon, Saturday morning, he'd wake up, he'd make eggs. He would go out in the yard and do God knows what. He'd come inside and have lunch, and then he'd sit in his chair and he'd watch this old house at 1 o'clock. And I'd be like, "Hey, college football's on. Do you mind if we watch?" And he'd fall asleep, and then I'd turn on college football. He would watch basketball games, but for whatever reason, he always did this. It would be like under 8 timeout, 2-point game, and he'd be like, "All right, I'm going to bed. Don't tell me what happened. Or wake me up if, you know, whatever." He'd be like, "Wake me up if KU loses. Or, you know, let me know, whatever." And then the next morning, he'd wake me up, "So what happened?" And they'd be like, "There is the internet. There is a newspaper in the front lawn. Like, you can figure this out. Why are you waking me up at 5:30 when you've woken up to ask about what happened?" But he would watch a full round of golf. Like, he would actually watch that. So I'm saying golf because he actually completed he would watch to the finish of it. What about you?
It might be golf, but honestly, if I were to add up all the hours, it would have been football.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's probably where I got it from, especially the Bears. So every Bears game that was ever on, and of course back then, not every game was because you didn't have Sunday ticket, but whenever the Bears were on. So when I was growing up as a kid, so my formative years, the Bears were really good. They went to the NFC Championship in 84, won the Super Bowl in 85, playoffs in 86, 87, 88, 80, I think 89.
Yeah.
It was probably the Bears. That was probably the formative thing. But then, and this is not my sport, my whole family loves baseball. I mean, they love and they know it really well. So the Braves and the Cubs.
Yeah. But I will say my dad never missed a high school basketball game. Even when I was in like elementary school, we'd go to the high school basketball game. So that's probably the actual answer.
Well,
this is a trap question. What happens first? Nebraska wins the Big Ten West or Nebraska wins an NCAA tournament game?
That's a trap question?
Well, it's just a, you know, Twitter hot take question that gives you a lot of
the latter. The latter, yeah.
Tournament game?
Yeah. I think that's not a knock on Nebraska football. I think Nebraska basketball can get that done in the next 2 years, and I think Nebraska football is going to be going through a transition in the next 2 years. And the athletic director already said as much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we all know that the next 2 years are going to be tough. They got to take a lot of young guys on the football side and make it and develop them so that they're seasoned veterans. And that doesn't happen overnight. I know they want to get Adrian Martinez that opportunity, but I think it's going to be hard. I think they had a great chance. I think they had a better chance of winning the West last year than they do this year. And I just don't know if they're going to be quite seasoned enough in 2021 to overcome what is a very hard schedule. So you always have to take that into account. And I'll say the tournament.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to make the tournament, and it's really not that hard to win a game in it.
I was going to say, I think it's harder to win the Big Ten West, especially when you consider where other programs are compared to Nebraska and what Nebraska's already done. And with basketball, all you need is 3-4 guys that are on the same page in a system that works really well, 19 wins, and the right matchup in the tournament. And that can happen with the way that Fred Hoiberg's doing things. That could happen, you know, 2 years, 3 years. And I think that winning the West is a monumental season-long thing that's going to take a couple years to actually figure out.
Yeah, and if you're asking me whether Nebraska football would win the Big Ten before Nebraska basketball, I'll take the football team.
I would agree.
Just so we're clear, like this is more of a – it's not that hard to win the NCAA tournament game. All right, next question. Both of us are married to a woman named Molly. What is your wife's favorite TV show all time?
All time? We're currently watching One Tree Hill.
Okay.
And few things I've seen make her happy than when I agreed to watch One Tree Hill. She loves Fixer Upper. She loves, there's a new HGTV show called Hometown.
Never heard of that one. Yeah. I've heard of Fixer Upper.
Yeah. It's like a small town in Mississippi, I think it is. And they fix up houses in Mississippi.
One day that show's going to come like to Nebraska. And I know already one.
Oh,
is
yeah.
On, but there'll be some small town in Nebraska where they.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, that's
definitely. Country living is becoming an increasingly popular thing. So.
Yeah. I would probably, that's a good question. I would probably say One Tree Hill because she because she really likes, she's not a big TV person. So
okay,
I'd probably say One Tree Hill.
One Tree Hill is such a screwed up show.
It's quite the watch.
Oh, it is. Like, wow, there's a lot going on in that town.
Yeah.
Wow.
To about 10 people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's when the dog eats the heart. It's the top moment. I think that happens in One Tree Hill. Okay. My wife's his friends.
Oh, yeah.
Any time of the day, it could be on. There's this movie once upon a time called PCU, and a guy was getting a master's thesis in the Caine-Hackman theory, which is at any given time during the course of a day, either a Michael Caine or Gene Hackman movie is on TV. That is not true anymore, but at any time of the day, either on Nickelodeon, TBS, or some other channel, you can find an episode of Friends, and it's usually one of the later episodes when Rachel is either pregnant or Ross and Monica are talking about getting pregnant. And for somebody, last child was born 7 years ago, and my wife and I have sort of moved beyond the pregnancy, getting pregnant, having a baby stage, and now we're sort of into the kid-raising thing. I'm like, Molly, can we please watch something else where the conversation constantly about pregnancy?
Right.
No longer relevant in our lives. You know, we're not having any more children, dear.
Right.
She doesn't think we are either, so. Friends.
That's great. That's really great. Well, it was also, I mean, it was on when you guys were, what, when you guys were early married?
No.
No, did you guys know each other at all? We it was formative years in the 90s.
We weren't married.
Sure, that's true. That's true.
But, yeah, no, it went off the air a couple years, two, 3 years before we got married. Yeah, it had sort of run its course by then. All right, a couple more, because if we went 10 more, we'd be here till noon. So. You get two more, I get two more. Go.
Okay. Okay, this is good. You are starting a professional football team. Mm-hmm. You get to choose anybody in NFL history to as your number one overall pick to build around. Who do you build your program around or your franchise around?
Joe Montana.
Nice.
It'd be Joe Montana or Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is flakier than Joe Montana. So I would pick Joe Montana. I think he's probably the best quarterback who ever played the game, with maybe the exception of Aaron Rodgers. And I'm not kidding. People always shake their head. But Rodgers is insanely gifted, but he's not the winner that Montana was. So Joe Montana.
That's good. I also have Joe Montana or Walter Payton. It would depend on depend on my quarterback. But I would also say Joe Montana.
Favorite player of all time is Walter Payton. Could talk for hours about him, but obviously the Bears did not win a Super Bowl because of Walter. God bless him and God rest him. They didn't win because of him. They won because of their defense and because they've had competent quarterback play from Jim McMahon. Joe Montana. Yeah, that one's pretty straightforward for me. I don't know. I if you were to ask me who the best player of all time was, I'd be Jim Brown, but I understand that you need a quarterback.
Yeah, that's why I thought Joe Montana as well. Because I think it's easier to build around a quarterback than it is around a running back.
Yeah, it is. It is. And he was great. He was truly great. Okay, next one. What are three albums that were on your Spotify playlist here in the last month?
I've been listening to a lot of Phoebe Bridgers. A lot. It's bad. So she had her first album, is Stranger in the Alps. So I've listened to a lot of that. I've been listening to a lot of Mac DeMarco, and his most recent album was called Here Comes the Cowboy, but I've listened to a lot of This Old Dog a lot. And then let's see what else. I usually, and this is something that's always in our house, but we listen to a lot of Kacey Musgraves in this house, like a lot. Molly will go to her grave arguing that one of her earlier albums, I can't remember, is better than Golden Hour. But Golden Hour is like perfect. We have that one on vinyl. So I would probably say one of those as well.
Okay. I had to look it up because I listen to a lot of music. Fiona Apple.
Sure. Did you like her new album, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I figured you would.
It's the best art made by anyone in the world in the last year. How's that? Yeah. I can't recommend it enough. It is really, really good. And it's fun to listen to an artist who finally, rarely do artists actually come into their own later in life. Mm-hmm. So if you listen to Fiona Apple's work earlier, it's great. I mean, she's an enormously talented and brilliant person who has a lot of gifts as a songwriter and other things. But I would say that she was often doing songs and albums and writing in reaction to or in response to what she thought might be cool. And often it was, and it was often really, really good. But this album is reflective of someone who is sort of like Jackson Pollock, sort of kicked open the door with the drip paintings later in his life. Same thing here. Mm-hmm. This is somebody who found a new way to do some of the things that she's always been doing. And it's different and weird. And you know it when you hear it. It's genius.
That's good.
No, of Monsters and Men.
Oh, nice. I love them. Yeah. I once reviewed one of their albums for the Arkansas Democratic Gazette.
So they're another one on here. And then Lou Reed, Street Hassle.
Nice.
And that's the most recent one. I like Lou Reed. And then, yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
That's good.
And some Van Morrison. But Van Morrison kind of covers other singers. Mm-hmm. That's the best thing he does, is he covers some songs that were written by other people but sung better by Van.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, last question.
What is one specific thing you are most excited to do when quarantine is over? Either one habit or hobby that you enjoyed with reporting and your job, or one thing that you miss doing just in the day-to-day basis, but you can't anymore.
In church.
Yeah.
Yep. And I don't know when that's going to come back. You know, I think that's one of the challenges with figuring out, you know, when we're going to go back and worship in person at church is it's an enclosed space. And there is, I think we've found that surfaces maybe aren't quite as dangerous as had been previously believed. But what can be dangerous is sharing air in an enclosed space. Mm-hmm. And so when you're singing loud, you're expelling, you know, droplets. And so that's tough. So we've thought about that and tried to figure it out. And, you know, how many people can we get in our building, which is nowhere near the number of people who would attend. And,
right.
Yeah. So that, no brainer.
Yeah.
And not just the worship piece of it, but seeing people.
Yeah.
Seeing people I haven't seen in a long time, seeing people that I care about, that I love, seeing people who I know need church, maybe even more than I do, and I need it a lot. Easy. That's my number one.
You? That's good. Work-wise, what I miss most is walking from the Hawks to the press box, or walking from the field, or from like the interview area in the weight room to the press box, and doing the like 2-minute debrief with you and Evan.
Yeah.
Of just like, let's all collectively talk real quick about how weird what just happened was, or how cool what just happened was, or and just kind of like divvying up, and then just like having Valentino's pizza at 11:15 and writing a story for Tuesday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I miss those small little, so that's and it's also, it's like, it's the nice, you know, walk through campus, or you know, and you can take a moment and be like, this is really cool. So that's kind of what I miss.
I like that too. I noticed that you did not say walking from the press box to the Hawks, because when you turn the corner of Memorial, Hawks, you hit the wind.
There are two wind tunnels on the University of Nebraska. Yes! That is one of them. The other one is near Hamilton Hall, but that one is the worst. Like, that one is it's just this wind tunnel that never ends. It's horrible.
When you're walking from the Hawks back to the press box, the wind, as it says in the benediction, the Irish benediction or the Irish blessing, is at your back. as you're processing Scott Frost's non-answer about an injury, or Harvey Verdusco's soliloquy about quarterback play, the wind is at your back. Yeah. All right. So now I've got to pick my final one here. And I did actually have, what did you look most forward to with the pandemic? So we did have one.
Good.
We have one question that crossed over. Oh, here it is. What is your favorite football uniform and or helmet? Can be pro, college, high school, whatever.
That's really good. I really like the all whites Chiefs uniforms. I like the whites a lot. I really like simple uniforms. So, like, I really like Nebraska's, yeah. particularly in the 90s, or any time before whatever happened in the early 2000s that everybody forgets about.
Right.
Those jerseys were atrocious. Mm-hmm. But I really like very simple. So, like, I like Alabama's a lot. I like Alabama uniforms.
Yeah.
I like Auburn's because of the color coordination.
Yes.
But if you just have, like, one solid color on top and one solid color on the bottom and one logo or like one letter on your helmet or one number or whatever, you're good with me. The minimalist, like the less chaos, anti-Oregon is fine with me.
When I'll say this much, when during the Rose Bowl, when the sunset was in Oregon's helping, that was pretty breathtaking though.
That was, yeah.
I was like, wow, the things that you can do. And that moment to me was the best moment of the entire bowl season. I'm like, oh God, I love college football. What a beautiful moment. The sun's shining and it's illuminating their helmets. I'm like, well done, Oregon. Well done.
And you knew they knew what they were doing too.
Oh, it was gorgeous. That was really cool.
Yeah.
Oh man, this sport can just make your heart do things. My favorite helmet is UCLA. Mm. My favorite uniform is LSU.
Yeah.
So
the white. Did you like how funky they got this year?
Who, LSU?
Yeah, they kind of went all over the place, didn't they? Didn't they have a little bit different?
I like them all.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, LSU's white helmet is great. Their yellow helmet's great. They used to have a gold helmet that they wore back in, I don't know, 10 years ago. Yeah, everything LSU does is good. Their colors are good. Everything UCLA does, so long as they don't go to a black look, which they've done a couple of times, is good. Yeah, UCLA and LSU are probably my numbers one and two. And then if I had to pick between Ohio State and Michigan, I'll take Ohio State. I like the little Buckeyes on the helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Ohio State's look more than I like Michigan's look. And then I'm a big fan of Nebraska, but I actually like the all whites.
I don't mind the all whites. Well, I don't think they're that bad. Whites. Yeah.
Nobody likes it, but I do. I like all white. I like the all white look. I don't like the all red look. They haven't done that very often, thank goodness.
That's not good.
I would love to see Nebraska in an all white with black stripes and a white helmet with a black end, sort of their alternate black uniforms, but an all white. Those look cool. And players would like them too. They'd be like, oh man, this is the best I've ever looked in Nebraska. They'd be so sweet. Yeah. Players love all white.
Yeah, they do.
They love it. Because it makes them look fast. Players like all white. And so Nebraska should endeavor to throw a little, you know, the occasional white top, white pant when they're on the road. I know Frost is a traditionalist, so he doesn't want to. I can understand him not wanting to do that, but
just email Adidas. He'll do whatever Adidas tells him to do. Adidas will do whatever. Yeah. The problem is Adidas sometimes overthinks it and they put like sleeves on a basketball jersey or put like camo on the shorts or.
Right. Yeah, they did that once.
Yeah. That's why I think Iowa State actually won those Big 12 tournaments with Fred Hoiberg, was because those jerseys that KU and Baylor and all the stupid Adidas schools were wearing were so bad that karma was like, we're giving it to this Nike school because you guys don't deserve this.
Let Hoiberg know that.
Okay.
He'd probably appreciate it. He'd be like, yeah, I don't. Actually, Chris, I don't think that's true.
That's actually a pretty good Fred Hoiberg impression.
Deadpan, you know, like.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. It's probably not true, Chris, but those were bad.
Yeah.
All right, that's our Pick 6 podcast for this week. Chris will be back next week to host with whomever he can roust help.
I'll wrangle somebody, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So Chris will be your guy next week, and then I'll return the week after. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. I know it's not easy with the coronavirus, but I hope you're able to do it anyway. Thanks a lot. Bye.